So almost anyone I talk to in the food world, if they know Mike Solomonov, they love Mike Solomonov. He's the chef of Zahav and a bunch of other restaurants in Philadelphia. He's got a new book out called Israeli Soul, but he's also one of these dudes who you just know could be the mayor of any town he lives in. You know what I mean? He's smart, he's funny, he's got a great vibe. And he was one of our favorite guests on the show this year, so we thought, how about we close out the year by bringing him back in for some story time and take a few calls together? So, Mike, it is awesome to have you back in, brother.
Oh, dude, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for the kind words.
So I got to say, I am really excited about your book, Israeli Soul.
Thank you.
And for one specific reason. I love the trim size. Yeah. I've just been needing a book that size to fit on my desk. No, the tahina shake.
Yes.
I'm obsessed with your tahina shake.
I appreciate that, man. We are very proud of the tahina shake, and I feel like the tahina shake is like the sort of like fuel that is carrying our like restaurant group right now. It's like so good. But I mean, it's simple, and it's essentially the tahina shake recipe that you can make with a blender.
Yeah.
In your house, you know?
Okay, so for folks who have never had a tahina shake, is it original to you?
Is original to us. Okay. We opened Goldie, which is our falafel shop, and we wanted it to actually be vegan without really calling it like a vegan, you know? Uh-huh. And so we had these like tahina milkshakes that are made with almond milk and tahina and like sugar. Yeah. You know, and they are awesome. They're very, very good. And we put them in Israeli Soul, which is our newish cookbook. And you can now make it in the comfort of your own home. So you can be in your bathrobe, right? And drink it out of the, like, I feel like the best smoothie or the best sort of milkshake is the one that you can drink out of the sort of top of the blender, you know? whilst, you know, watching TV in your underwear. And I feel like it tastes better that way. So now you can do that. And if you don't want to do that, you can just come into Goldie in your bathrobe and drink shakes that way. But we're really excited about the book. I mean, we really, after Zahav was such a huge project and such an important project for us, and taking all the sort of the history and like my personal history and my family's history and all the different cuisines and sort of synthesizing them and having Zahav the restaurant sort of be this like conduit. Mm-hmm. What we did was took the whole team that worked on that and just like flew them. We just went to Israel and we shot film and ate for like 8 days.
Yeah.
And had like 82 meals and then came back from that and sort of put the book together based on like our experience. Yeah. So it's very, very different, really fun, really, really vibrant. And, you know, naming books is not the easiest thing to do sometimes. And
sometimes
it was easy.
It's incredibly painful.
Exactly. So for Zahav, it made sense. We had a restaurant, and that was like the way that we sort of like introduced everybody to what it was that we were doing, right? And with Israeli Soul, we were like, well, what do we don't want to call it like Israeli street food, you know? And we kept referring to the sort of soul of dining that we were doing, you know? And it wasn't like, it was like, how do you put vocabulary to the sort of marketplace, to the standing in kiosks at 2 o'clock in the morning, to the sort of tiny little restaurants that serve like one thing, to the tables like littered with like 10 different salad team and, you know, and what do we sort of call that? And we were just, the word Israeli Soul came up not as a title for the book, but like kind of to the method in which we were traveling through the country and eating. And then it just sort of stuck.
Yeah. So where do you find the most soul when you're eating in Israel?
So I think that it's hard to not find the most soul in people's homes. I think that when you eat in somebody's home, you realize that everybody, every person that makes up that household is from somewhere else, essentially. And with them, they've brought their, you know, their food from the diaspora or the food from the land, and the way that it all comes at this intersection on a table. As cliched as that sound, I mean, that's the way that it happens. So I feel like the most soul is in the house. But you see it in so many different ways, so many different varieties everywhere that you go. You cannot help but run into a plethora of cultures on the street, in bus stops, in restaurants, on the side of the road, you know, driving in the north in the Galilee and just having these people sort of making like mountain bread over a fire, you know?
Yeah.
You just can't help but run into it. So, but I do think that the best way to experience Israeli soul is in somebody's home.
How'd you get into people's houses? How'd you get into their homes?
It's a very surprisingly easy to do in Israel. I think you could just knock on somebody's door like before Shabbat and they'll bring you in. I've got a lot of family there, but people are super open and super welcoming, and hospitality in the truest form exists over there. It really does. And I think that, I don't know, why don't you come with us sometime, man? You would love it. You've told me you've never been lifted on a chair for a celebration. We could make that happen over there, you know?
Get off the plane, get on a chair.
Get off the plane, we'll put you on a chair right through customs. Yeah, that wouldn't raise an eyebrow. But then you could come to, like, my dad's house on Saturday afternoon, and it's Bulgarian, Romanian, Persian, Arabic, you know, it's everything. And that's what, there's nothing like that. There's nothing like seeing the way that certain individuals and family members or people that are at the table cling on to these things that are multi-generation, that represent who they are. The way that they cook that, the way that they handle the eggplant over the charcoal and gently peel the skin and mince up the flesh just right with just the right amount of garlic and salt to represent Romanian Jewry, right? There's just not, there's no way to like really describe that. So I think you have to come with me.
God, I'd love to see that. That'd be incredible. Well, thank you for the invitation. But okay, so this is totally different. And maybe it's just a morbid curiosity, but I have been.
Yes, I love the way that this question is being asked.
I've been sort of collecting disaster stories from some of the people I interview. We warned you about this, right?
You did warn me about that. What was my answer? I don't remember. I have so many of them. You know, the problem is that a lot of like the disasters are like, you know, things that you like try to block out and forget in restaurants. I'm trying to think of like what, I know what it was. The disaster story. You ready?
I'm ready.
You ready? Okay. So it was like probably my first time or one of the earlier times that I've done like live television. You know, these like morning shows, you have 2.5 minutes and it's like not necessarily about the food, but you want to be super animated, right? And I was going to Japanese mandolin celery.
Okay.
And that was kind of how I was going to open it. And I think it was like maybe like a Passover thing or what. And I ended up in the first second, like they opened like, I'm here with Chef Michael Solomonov. And I wanted to be mandolining. And I sliced the tip of my thumb off.
Oh.
Like in the first second. And I had to grab like a side towel and cover my thumb, and it was my right hand. I'm a righty, and I had to go through 3 minutes without indicating that I was like bleeding profusely from my thumb, and had my hand behind my back, and I was gripping a towel, and somehow turned the segment into like taste this, taste that, and then like rock, paper, scissors for like it was Passover. So there was like a big pile of like horseradish, right? Or the crane, the sort of beet pickled horseradish.
Yeah.
And I turned it into like, you know, who's gonna eat the, you know, the giant teaspoon of like or tablespoon of horseradish, and somehow got through 3 minutes without having to use my right hand or cook.
Yeah.
And that was cool.
A mouthful of horseradish, you're crying.
I was in shock because, you know, whenever the first, you know, mandolins are like
are rough, dude. There's not
super sharp.
Everybody cuts their fingers. You never expect it to happen. And I remember making everybody in the restaurant afterwards later that night, like watch it because it was like really disturbing if you knew what was happening. But I was impressed with that.
I'm impressed with you. I also like the fact that the entire time you were telling the story, you clenched your right hand into a fist and hid it under the table.
I had to.
You were just like reliving that moment.
I know. It hurt. I was like holding my, like the bottom of my shirt, you know? Yeah, it totally, that was a situation.
Well, I'm sorry you had to experience
that. What's your disaster story?
Oh, dude. Oh, I have one for you, man. But actually, we have to go to a break, so hold on. We'll be back with that story, and Chef Mike Solomonoff is sticking around to take your calls. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. We've been spending this episode with the chef Mike Solomonoff of Zahav and author of the new book, Israeli Soul. Mike, we're back from the break.
I'm feeling refreshed, Francis. How about you?
I've never had more energy. All right, so I...
We should do this like all the time, you and I.
Let's take it on the road. All right, yeah. So I promised you my disaster story. And okay, it was my last night in culinary school. Like literally the very last night. We were graduating the next day.
Mm-hmm. And you went to FCI or no?
I went to CIA.
Okay.
The Culinary Institute of America. We have a school song.
Do you really?
Yeah. I'm not going to sing it for you.
Disaster stories.
It was the last night of school. And we were graduating the next morning at like some ungodly hour in the morning, like, you know, commencement at 7:45, right. You know, something totally, I think, meant to keep us safe for the night.
Yeah.
You know, what it also just meant was everyone was showing up still drunk from the night before.
Yeah, or stay awake.
Yeah. But I was excited and I was like, you know, emotional, had a really good time. You know, all these kids I've been in school with for 2 years, you know, you want to remember the night. And, I was also, not to brag, but I was like our class speaker for the next day. So I was like thinking about that. What am I going to say? And the last class I had in cooking school was in the front of the house. So the last like however months of our program, you had to like work in our school restaurants, either in the front or the back, and you switch. So whatever, like I happened to have a shift as a server as my very last night of culinary school. And we were in our classic old school French restaurant. And one of the things that we got to do in the front of the house was tableside service, which I love.
Of course.
Because you get to be a ham in front of like, people, and they're so psyched, and, you know, whatever. You just got to be
a
clown.
You literally light, like, a waffle on fire, and they think it's, like, the most brilliant thing ever.
Yeah. Three stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was totally my vibe, right? Yeah. And so we were serving. We had been serving bananas Foster, bananas flambé on our tableside dessert for a couple of weeks. I love doing it. They taught me this really cool technique where you can pick up the banana, and it's very sanitary because you cut off the top of it and then you insert a fork into the skin and you roll the skin down so you never touch the banana flesh.
Unbelievable.
Wows people.
Yeah.
Then you've got your, you know, you've got your little burner, you've got your butter and your brown sugar, and you're slicing the banana still in the skin to fall into the pan,
right.
Caramelizing it. You get the rum, flames, you pour it over. People love it.
They go crazy.
Yeah. So I am loving it because they're loving it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, like the last day of class, they switch out the menu and it's not a Bananas Foster, which we've been doing for 3 straight weeks.
Yeah.
But now it's Cherry's Jubilee.
Mm.
Which is a fine dessert.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that we graduated on November like 29th or whatever it was.
Cherry's Jubilee is like no Banana Foster.
It's no Bananas Foster. There's no cool cutting technique. And here's the deal. I pick up the ramekin of cherries and I drop it into the pan.
Oh, and it catches on fire?
No, it goes clunk because they're frozen.
No.
Frozen cherries because it's November.
That's whack.
It's not cool.
Yeah.
It is not cool. So I'm like really bummed out that the guests are like not as excited. They're like, oh, they're frozen. I mean, I totally pulled some bowl out of my back pocket and was like, oh, yes, of course, because, you know, we had these beautiful cherries in June, and so we had to preserve them all year round so our guests could enjoy them. We flash froze them immediately.
Froze.
Yeah,
right.
I think we got them out of a bag.
I know, because we have a flash freezer here. Yeah, in the back. That's also the magic of front of the house, is to just basically lie through your teeth.
Absolutely.
Say whatever.
So anyway, so I'm like making the Cherries Jubilee all night long. I was like, okay, cool. But here comes the last table. And it's like 11:59 at night. You know, we're going to turn to pumpkins.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this for them. And the really cool thing about Cherry's Jubilee is you're burning kirsch instead of rum. And kirsch burns super blue. Mm-hmm. Like when you set kirsch, it's a crazy...
It's a crazy color.
Otherworld cobalt blue with the red cherries. It looks really amazing. So I'm like, okay, here we go. Got the pan. I've got the cherries. Plunk! Mm-hmm. They're softening up in the butter.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to give like a three count of kirsch. And I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4 Ugh. 5, 6
This is never a good,
7
never a good thing.
I'm like, I'm going to do this. I tip that pan into the flame.
Yeah.
And the next thing I remember is a fireball. a fireball coming to end creation right at my face.
Oh my God.
And I remember ducking, but I remember not knowing if I ducked enough.
Oh.
And I look up afterwards and I look around the room and all of my fellow students who I'd been so emotional about leaving are doubled over laughing. And like my teacher is like wiping tears from his eyes.
Oh man.
And he just comes over after I'm done serving and he puts his hand on my shoulders. You should go to the bathroom right now.
Wow.
And all I think is, dear God, let me have eyebrows.
Yeah. Did you get burned?
I still have my eyebrows.
Yeah.
But I had like sort of like vaguely Easy spiky hair at the time. And definitely like a quarter of my hair was not the same length as the other of my hair.
You know, what I've learned is that kirsch flames don't like hair product either. Or they love hair products, you know? Oh, my gosh. First of all, that's amazing. And I'm so happy that, like, nobody got injured.
Thank you.
How was your speech?
Went off okay.
Good.
I got emotional.
Good. You know what you should do? It's like if you're ever, like, tanking in a speech, you just put kirsch in a pan and light it on fire and run off stage.
Mike, it's been awesome hanging with you today, man.
It has been so fun hanging out with you. We got to do this again. Thank you so much for having me on. It's such a pleasure catching up, bro.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you.
Mike Solomonov's new book is called Israeli Soul, and he left us with his recipe for that awesome tahina shake. You can find it at splendidtable.org.